Hello, and welcome to Pineapple Classrooms, the blog and podcast celebrating the teachers of Albuquerque. My name is Kathy Wolf-James, and I'm the editor and host of Pineapple Classrooms. I am so excited to share with you this week's episode. We are talking to Rachel Daly, who is a 7th grade English language arts and drama teacher at Ernie Pyle Middle School. Rachel was nominated by Chris Ortiz, and Chris Ortiz is a science teacher at Ernie Pyle. And Chris nominated Rachel because he noticed that his students, who he shared with Ms. Daly, were responding so positively to her instructional strategies. And I think that says so much about Rachel when you can tell she's a great teacher from the students who walk out of her classroom. And I am so inspired by Rachel. I walked out of her classroom for this podcast when we recorded the episode with 10 new ideas of things that I wanted to try with my second grade students. And Rachel teaches 7th grade. So I think that also speaks to the power of her instructional strategies. I am so excited to share this episode with you. Enjoy. And welcome to Pineapple Classrooms. I am here on a Sunday morning with Rachel Daly at Ernie Pyle Middle School. Rachel teaches English language arts and drama here. Rachel, how long have you been teaching?
I will have been teaching 10 years at the end of this semester.
Wow. have you seen any giant shifts as you've taught? Like Common Core, right?
Right. I mean, I'm trying to think. I feel like Common Core has come in, and that definitely has been a shift in the way we approach our content. But I don't think within the 10 years I've seen a huge shift in my student population. I mean, you definitely hear people talking about a shift in students and how tech is changing their lives and things. But to me, it feels like they're really just the same kids that I had 10 years ago. I think the shifts really are in education itself. A huge shift towards over-testing in the classroom and that kind of shift that's been challenging as a teacher. But with the kids, they're just kids.
Kids are kids. Absolutely. Speaking of, like, I look over and I see a giant cart, a technology cart. How do you use technology in your classroom?
So there are a lot of different ways that I am able to use technology, which is great. I actually share this cart with a team of teachers. Okay. And so I don't use technology as a daily routine because I don't want to get used to a routine then have the cart taken to another classroom.
Right.
But I do use it for specific projects. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy using Google with my students. And so I have specific projects throughout the year that I do. At the end, I do a music as poetry unit. And at the end of that unit, they get to choose their own songs to analyze. And then they use the Google Slides. And I have kind of a format they use. And they create their own slide presentation about two different songs. And they analyze them for figurative language. Mm-hmm. With my short stories unit, I usually end that unit where they write their own short story after analyzing some great written work that already exists, and they write their own, and we do that on Google, and I use that. I use editing through there, and they're able to share their stories with each other and read online. It allows us to be paperless, which is nice. And I also use a couple websites like Kia Web, which is not one I know a lot of people use, but you can do tests and things on it, and you can find tests from other educators. And so in my Romeo and Juliet unit at the end of the year, I have quizzes and things. They get immediate feedback on their responses when I use that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of different things throughout the year, but I try not to get pinned into one space since I know I can lose the computers. So I sign up for specific times.
I mean, I think you hit at the core there. Like, teaching still has to be teaching because technology, right? The Wi-Fi can go out.
Right.
Right. Absolutely. So kids are kids. Teaching is still teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's a tool. But I can teach with the tool. I can teach without the tool. And so it's a good motivator for students. They like using it. Mm-hmm. But it's not a necessity in my classroom.
Absolutely. And still having an opportunity to teach different competencies to kids, like
right.
being able to use technology to present your information. which, you know, they need.
Exactly.
Explicit instruction.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So within your career of education, what is something you are passionate about as an educator?
I'm really passionate about teaching the whole child. I'm really passionate about my students, and I think a lot of times we can look at a test score and we can say, man, this kid, seventh grade, reading at a second grade level, and yes, I do have a student like that this mm-hmm. year. I have a lot of students that read within the elementary range of third to fifth grade, and it's very easy to get bogged down and say, well, they need skills and they need this, and I don't believe in that. I believe there are many, many ways for a student to show you their knowledge and show you their learning, and so I like to give them many different opportunities to show me what they know outside of just a test score. So I do that through interactive notebooks where they get to kind of select what they put to show their understanding of what we learned, a concept that we learned. I do that through projects that they can present. I do that through collaboration and discussions such as Socratic seminars, which my kids are begging for another one, which is the first year they're excited about it. So that's
amazing.
Yes. Yeah. So I try to find a lot of different ways to access information and to have students show me what they know so that it's not just, okay, we took a test and you failed, so you clearly suck. I mean, I think kids often get that message, and I don't want them to think they're just a test score. So, I mean, I can use the data to know what I need to help them with skills-wise, but it's not the only way to know what a student is able to accomplish. I've had students, I'm thinking of one specifically, who are really creative writers, and they score really low on a standardized test for reading, and they think that they're not good enough. They think that they're not grade level. They think, you know, they hear all these messages. But they're incredibly creative and can be really successful. And so I try to make sure I give them those avenues. I have one girl who scored quite low in her tests last year, but she wrote this incredibly creative story for our short story unit. I have her, I've had her in drama twice now. She's in drama 2 this year. And she was like, oh, I can't write. And I'm like, what are you talking about? You wrote a whole play. We're doing the play that you helped us write. So giving kids an opportunity to find success while still helping them with skills that they need, I'm really passionate about that.
I am just, like, blown away by your response, just because it hits so close to home for me, too. Like, everything you just described, I think, aligns with what we try to do in elementary, where you do have students, like, I'm a second grade teacher, I have students who are reading at sixth grade level, but then I also have students who cannot decode, like, have no alphabetic principle yet. And so when you have people on this wide range, like your students, how do you make them all feel confident? How do you make sure that they can all show what they know, rather than here's what you don't know?
Right.
And that's huge. I think that across the board, that's that kind of shift in your thinking as a teacher is a game changer for your students.
Yeah, I think it's hugely important. And I worry for kids who are in classrooms where they only care about the test scores, but I think those classrooms are really few and far between. I think most teachers really try to find good access points for students to get the content. And it's not even just about showing me what you know, but also me respecting you as a seventh grader. I mean, just because a student is reading at a fourth grade level doesn't mean they're going to want to sit there and read a fourth grade book. So I try to find a way for them to access grade level content, regardless of where their reading level is, with just a lot of scaffolding and a lot of support. I read Romeo and Juliet at the end of the year with my students, and every single one of my students is able by the end of the unit to understand the story and the concept through scaffolding and through support, but they always love it. And a lot of times my lower readers are the ones who are the most proud of themselves because they read Shakespeare.
Right.
You know? And yes, I use the double-sided text, and so you have the modern text and the Shakespeare text, and I kind of scaffold how much we use or whatever depending on the skill level of the students. But their pride in being able to access this high-level text through support with the class is important. It's important for them to be treated like a seventh grader, even if they're reading at a lower level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the joy of learning together, being in a classroom, rather than reading it by yourself somewhere, is that you have each and every single student as support to one another.
Exactly.
Which is, boom.
Yeah. Yeah, which is huge.
I know. This leaves me wondering, what made you decide to be an English language arts, like, middle school teacher?
Well, I wanted to be a teacher pretty much my whole life. I remember being in, like, middle school and thinking I was going to be a kindergarten teacher, and I had this goal that I'd have really long hair and the kids could crawl through my hair, because I was, like, a kid myself. I was, that'd be cool if your teacher would, like... So I've matured past that point. But when I got to high school, I was pretty sure I wanted to work with the middle school group. I did when I was a freshman, I was a counselor to what we had in Oregon where I went to school, an outdoor school. And sixth graders would go to this camp and the high schoolers would go and be counselors. And I did that a couple times, but the first time I did it and I was teaching these lessons in the woods to these sixth grade students, I was like, I'm going to be a sixth grade teacher. This is what I'm going to do with my life. And amazingly, I did. I became a teacher in the middle school level. I actually like seventh grade better than sixth grade now that I'm a little bit older and I've tried both grade levels. Mm-hmm. But I just knew that that's what I wanted to do. And then my secondary passion was English. I have a double major. My bachelor's degree was a double major in English and elementary education with a secondary endorsement. So it just makes sense. Language arts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
From my perspective, you're a very special person.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm like middle school teachers. Yeah.
But see, now I feel like that way about elementary school teachers. My first work job that I had, I worked at St. Teresa Catholic School, and we had buddy classrooms because that's a K through eight.
Wow.
And so our buddy classroom was with the kindergarten group. So I would take my middle schoolers down to the kindergarten, and like we would go and help the kindergartners, maybe read to them. We did different things. And I remember one day I showed up to the kindergarten class, and there was just. There were cupcakes everywhere. And there's like frosting on the tables. I'm looking around and I'm like, oh my God, these women are saints, because there were two women who worked in there. And after the class, and we worked with the kids and everything, and I was talking to them, they're like, man, I see you with those middle schoolers, and I just think you're such a saint. I was like,
different kinds of patience.
You stay in your class, I'll stay in mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
I started off as like thinking I would be a kindergarten teacher too. I was imagining short hair, however.
That's probably better in retrospect.
And my very first day of like going to observe in a kindergarten classroom, I like bent down to help a kid. She turned her head to like, thought she was going to ask me a question. My mouth's open to respond and she coughs in my open mouth.
Oh my God.
And I was like, oh no, oh no. I went back for day two though. So yeah, it wasn't, yeah. Oh man. But by the end, if I heard one more kid say, so-and-so broke my crayon, I was going to lose it.
Yeah.
So I think it's just different kinds of patience.
Yes.
And yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, Rachel, you were nominated by another teacher at your school, Chris Ortiz. Did he tell you why he nominated you?
He didn't. I had no idea. I got your email that I'd been nominated. I had no idea what the project was, so I kind of looked it up, and it seems like an amazing project. It's interesting. I looked through all your blog posts, and Chris, who's a fantastic teacher, I mean, you interviewed him.
Absolutely.
I'm in awe of his profession. He's just fantastic. He's a wonderful teacher. He's a wonderful educator. So I'm very humbled by him nominating me. But I was looking through at the educators you've spoken to, and they're just very, seems like a great collection of people. And actually, my son's fifth grade teacher is one of the teachers you spoke to. And
no
that
way.
That cracked me up.
His fifth grade teacher.
Miss Lowther. Yes. And it's funny because she had actually my neighbor as well. We found out at a parent thing in the evenings. So that kind of tickled me. It's such a small world. APS, we're such a small community of teachers. We're really, I love how much we support each other and are there for each other even across the district.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
But he actually nominated you for a specific reason, and I'd like to share that with you now.
Oh, that's great.
My name is Chris Ortiz, and I nominated Rachel Daly for a Pineapple Classroom because I think she's a fabulous language arts and drama teacher. We've worked together for many years at Ernie Pyle, and I believe she deserves recognition for all the great things she does. She has exceptional organizational skills that help foster a classroom community focused on learning. She develops lessons that are relevant to her students, uses a variety of strategies to make learning accessible to all of them. Many of my students from last year tell me how much they enjoy her class and the assignments she creates. Outside the classroom, she's an exemplary teacher leader with a great mind for creative problem solving. We're lucky to have her as an SLC leader, union representative, and member of the instructional leadership team. She always has a positive attitude and always comes up with great solutions to many of the issues we discuss. I'm happy that she was selected to share all the great things she does for her students and our school community.
That's so nice.
So some of the things he mentioned, like other teachers are noticing their kids, like their students come in and they're just excited about the impact you've made.
That's awesome. That warms my heart to hear. That's fantastic.
And also you do so much for your school on top of just being an exemplary teacher. Wow.
Well, thanks. I guess if we're talking about passions, I have my passion for my students and then I have my passion for teachers as a community. And I try to reach out as much as I can to support other teachers. Like Chris said, I try to work on the instructional council and I facilitate my SLC, but I also work with the union. I've supported teachers as a union representative, but our union is a great resource to support teachers. We have a lot of programs through the union for professional development. And I am incredibly lucky and blessed to be part of one of the cohorts for managing behaviors in the school community. So I'm able through that cohort to then also teach classes within that program. And so I teach professional development through the union. This year I'm doing that through the mentor classes. So mentor teachers then come to the classes to learn more about classroom management that I facilitate. And I'm really passionate about helping other teachers and being there and hearing from each other teachers and bringing people into my room. I've had a student teacher in the past. I've been a mentor teacher in the past. And every one of those experiences has enriched my profession so much. And I've grown so much from working with every teacher that I have. So that's awesome that Chris nominated me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So what you just said about the union and mentors and like reaching out and helping like the newer teachers and just like even if they're not newer, just a teacher down the hall who needs help. I know I got an email recently from the union saying they're looking for mentors. Are there like certain kinds of teachers who should like really think about like pursuing that?
Definitely. I think that if you're a teacher that wants to support somebody that's new coming to the profession, I think that if you have a negative view about the profession, you want to be careful that you're not channeling that towards your mentee, because that can be really easy to flow over. But I think even if you're maybe someone who is starting to feel kind of negative and you need a boost, you need something new, being a mentor is really fantastic. It really gives you the chance to see the classroom through a new teacher's perspective. And support them, and it kind of reinforces some of the things that you do yourself, because you're like, oh, this is something that I don't think about. I've been doing it for years, but this is something that could really help you. And building that community and building that opportunity to have those conversations with other teachers in other classrooms, I think is huge. I think anyone who's even a little bit interested in doing it should, because I think it really grows us as a profession to help each other and support each other.
Absolutely. Fresh ideas. Also, if you're a teacher who's been doing it for a while.
Like, yeah. I mean, I've been a mentor teacher to two teachers now, and I've learned things from both of those teachers. I've taken things to my class that they've come up with. So it's not, I don't think you should be a mentor teacher if you think that you're going to come in and like solve someone's problems or anything like that.
Right.
But having that open dialogue is really helpful and really refreshing.
So in your pursuit of like being a teacher leader, mentor, like through these different avenues, has there been a time where you encountered a difficulty while doing that?
As a teacher leader, not so much. I mean, I think that when you're an instructional council, or even if you're facilitating a small learning community, a professional learning community, you're going to have people that have different views and different ideas. But I think that if you see that as a challenge, then you probably shouldn't be a leader, because you're not reflecting on what other people need. And so I think a big part of being a teacher leader is putting your own agenda aside, and it's not always easy to do, but putting aside your own agenda and your own goals and kind of trying to see what everyone needs and what you can do to support everyone in the room to the most of your ability. I mean, you can't always do that, obviously. So I think sometimes that can be a challenge if you're hitting up against a wall and you really think something's important, but then you just have to see that not as a challenge, but as an opportunity for you to see the other perspective and to kind of question what you were coming in with and what, if that's really being helpful to the community at large.
And that's really hard to do. Like, it takes energy first to like pursue something you are really passionate about. Like, if you are trying to like push an initiative forward, but then to be able to step back and use the energy to like look around and think about other people, especially if you're just like barely getting by
right
here where like things are really challenging. So on that note, are there any things you do to help yourself from feeling burnt out during the school year?
Yes. And I think that goes back to teacher relationships. Mm-hmm. I have a couple really close teacher friends, and I spend time talking to them and sometimes venting, you know,
sure,
to get the vent out. But having those opportunities to talk to other teachers, talk to colleagues about your challenges and your frustrations, and then going past the vent and actually reflecting on it and finding, okay, this didn't work. So how do I fix it? I think you get being able to move from that place of venting and frustration to the place of, okay, I'm past that. I'm done with that. So now what do I do to fix my problem, to fix the issue that I'm having, whether it's an issue with the student that is challenging my classroom management strategy, or whether it's an issue with a lesson that didn't work, or a colleague that you feel like isn't doing what you want them to do, or whatever it is, mm-hmm. Reflecting on that. And using other teachers as a resource to kind of help go, okay, I'm struggling, help me out here.
To get to that next step.
Yeah.
So in pursuit of either teacher leadership or in teaching the whole child, is there a success story that sticks out in your mind?
Well, I think any time a student has that aha moment or a student is proud of something, that's always that moment of success. I think hearing someone that I respect as much as Chris Ortiz saying that his students come to him and say they enjoy my class, that's an aha moment. But getting to hear from past students is always huge. I have a student that was one of my favorites. We don't have favorites, but we do. from a few years back, I have her sister this year. And so she came to the parent, open house, the parent open house. And she came in and she looked so different. It's been like years since I've taught her. And I was like, is that student? And she came and gave me a big hug. And I've changed my name since I taught her. And so at first she didn't think her sister had me as a teacher. And she's like, I'm so glad my sister has you. You're my favorite teacher. And hearing that from a past student is really nice and kind of rewarding. So I don't think it's been like big successes, you know, or anything like that. I think it's the little hearing from students. I had a student find me on Facebook last year, and she told me that she's publishing a children's novel.
Wow.
And the fact that I had her in middle school and she's looking me up now when she's, you know, in college and publishing a children's novel to tell me thank you for her confidence to be able to do it was huge. It was really amazing for me to have that experience. So I think those rewards, they come when you're not expecting them, and they come when you see a student years later that's feeling positive and feeling success, but also this just successes in your classroom. A student that never does an assignment, and then you give them something that they really love and enjoy, and you see them succeed in that assignment. So it can be big and it can be little.
Some immediate and some,
yeah,
you gotta wait for it.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely not every day.
Absolutely. So we were talking about new teachers earlier. Do you have one piece of advice for someone who's in their first year?
Yeah, don't try and do everything. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times, especially with teachers that I've mentored, they want to be able to fix everything for every student. And I think that's a really worthy goal, but I think you're going to burn yourself out really fast with that goal. And I think it's just know your sphere of influence and do as much as you can to support the students that are in your room when you have them. But don't think that you can go home with them, and don't think that you can come in a knight in shining armor and save them, because nobody really wants to be saved anyway. But you can help them, and you can do what you can within your sphere of influence. You're not going to take a kid that's reading at a fourth grade level and have them ready for high school at the end of the year. But you can take that kid and make them feel very confident and have them move a grade level and get ready for their next middle school class next year. So just find those small successes and don't expect yourself to be able to move the whole world. I think is the biggest advice I'd give to a new teacher.
Absolutely. And then how do you welcome people into your classroom?
I try to be as welcoming as possible. Just through, I've done PDs through my school, and sharing things. I try to share my lessons and strategies. I've had teachers ask me about how to do certain things, and I'll try and kind of share, well, this is what I do, and let's look at what you're doing and maybe help them that way. I use a website called planbook.com. Mm-hmm. So all of my lessons are available online. And so I've used that to help other teachers plan. We can plan together and we can look at lessons and we can kind of share what we're doing. As a drama teacher, I literally invite people into my classroom because my students spend a lot of time preparing their performances. And I do a couple units because my drama class is really a support for reading and language arts, reading and writing. So I have a couple units where they write their own plays. And so I definitely make sure I get classes in. I have at the end of the year with my theater group, I have a fractured fairy tale unit where they come up with their own fractured fairy tale. They write the whole thing, then they analyze their scene and they learn their lines and they act it out and they get their props and their set and everything. And then at the end of the year, we invite the fourth grade classes from Kit Carson over and they come and they watch their performances. So then that's a good way for me to teach them about audience as well. So we talk about, well, your audience is a fourth grade classroom, and they really get to see that whole writing process all the way out to the performance end of it. So I try to bring people into the classroom as much as possible. Mm-hmm. But those are the main ways that I can think of that I do it.
And when students can have that authentic audience, that's so powerful too.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thank you, Rachel, for opening up your classroom today and sharing your, like, just your amazing profession.
Well, thanks for coming in.
On a Sunday.
Yes, on a Sunday.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Pineapple Classrooms. A big thank you to Chris and Rachel for being willing to take part in this project. There's more information to go along with this episode on the blog. It has some of those great resources Rachel talked about, some more information about her interactive notebooks, and how she gives students choice within the framework of units. Thank you for tuning into this week's episode. You can find us many places on the internet, pineappleclassrooms.com, where we would love it if you went to the nominations tab and nominated a fabulous teacher that you know. Let's give them all a shout out together. And you can also find us on Twitter and Instagram, and please subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. Have a great week. Bye.